Gregory, entertainer, author, civil rights activist, and candidate for the President of the United States. Mr. Gregory spoke last week as a part of the Great Issues series sponsored by the Associated Students of Michigan State University. He is introduced by a member of ASMSU.
On behalf of the Great Issues series sponsored by ASMSU, I'd like to welcome you to hear Dick Gregory speak today. We neither condemn nor condone the speaker's ideas or what he advocates, but we provide a platform so you get an unbiased view of what he's saying without any distortion of the news media. Mr. Gregory at the present time is on a 40-day fast to protest the suffering on both sides of the war in Vietnam. Since his Thanksgiving Day fast, he hasn't cut his hair or shaved in protest of the war. Mr. Gregory is a well-known comedian and author, and I think of what he has to say today is of very vital interest to us, especially with the President's report on the inner city riots. I urge you to give him your attention. Thank you very much. Mr. Gregory?
Like you say, thank you very much, and you can leave the house lights on. I can't tell you that it's not only a pleasure to be here, it's a pleasure to be back in the country for a change. The first time in my life I ever went out the country for no reason at all, just to protest. I didn't appreciate right before Christmas, LBJ went halfway around the world, stopped off, got blessed by the Pope, then come back home and said, we can't go out no more. And so I must tell you that upset me, because you talk about the reason they don't want you going out is because something about the balance of payment. If they're going to make a law like that, it shouldn't pertain to colored folks, because I don't know no color cat in Chicago or in America that's ever messed up the balance of payment. There's a whole lot of things people can say about us that's true, but sending money to Israel and Poland and Italy is not one of them. Most we do is might mail a money order to Memphis. And so I had an enjoyable time, and matter of fact, while I was over there in Europe, I was mighty tempted to fly to South Africa and get me a white heart. Because when you stop and think about it, and I don't mean to insinuate nothing about this, but you know that black heart transplant's the only one that worked. Which I don't know if that's bad or good for color folks. As I really hope you white folks don't start assuming we're going to be your spare parts. You know, the fact that I am a candidate for the presidency of the United States, I have a lot of people ask me questions. If you were elected president, what's the first thing you would do, which seems like a very stupid question. I thought the whole world knew, like, the first thing I would do after becoming president is paint the White House black. The second thing would be to bring all the soldiers home from Vietnam and send LBJ. I'd send LBJ to Vietnam with nothing but a barbecue gun. And have Eartha Kitt call him up every morning and say, we working on peace feelers, baby. You know, a lot of people ask me, say, Greg, if you were elected president of the United States, what group of people do you think you'd have the most problems from? And in all honesty, I think if I become president of the United States, I'd probably have the most problems from colored folks. Because the first thing I'd do is wipe out the poverty program and set up a $50 billion a year white folks rest program. And I'd take all them good jobs away from you white folks and put you on my rest program. And I'd give my black brother a good job for the first time in his life. And I guarantee you within 6 months' time, colored folks would be marching on me. I can just hear them now. Nigga, what's wrong with you? Got these white folks sitting out here not working, getting these checks, having all them babies? See, I must tell you, it is a pleasure to be here with you young folks this evening. I spent about 90% of my time on college campuses today. I get a lot of letters from people after I speak saying, you know, we listened to you and we thought you were nonviolent, but you talk so much about violence, how can you be nonviolent? Well, let me say this, maybe I can save you a stamp. I am committed to nonviolence. That's my personal hang-up. I don't go around preaching it to people. I think the whole world would be better off if it was nonviolent. I feel that no one can really talk about America today, in all honesty, without talking about violence, because America is a very violent country. Matt Dillon comes into your home once a week teaching you it is a virtue to shoot straight. A country where its constitution gives you a right to bear arms. But as I say, my nonviolence is to myself. I would never kill a man nor hurt a man. Dr. King is a very close personal friend of mine. I feel Dr. King is probably the number one moral force on the face of this earth today. But I don't appreciate Dr. King telling black folks to be nonviolent and not telling white folks to be nonviolent. And I feel the same way if white folks was marching through black communities being attacked by black folks and Dr. King told white folks to pray and turn the other cheek and not told black folks to do the same thing. I feel that in this country with so much violence, the thing that hurts me the most is not the violence that exists in this country, is America's attitude towards violence. Make no mistake about it, America is not scared of violence. She is scared of black violence. White violence, white crime have never upset this country. This is very evident when LBJ was giving his State of the Union message at a time when the Senate and the Congress and the President can't agree on nothing until he mentions crime in the street and they cheer him for 5 minutes. And the reason, because crime in the street is America's new way of saying nigger. Now, we are not sick enough to stand here and say America should not deal with black crime or say America should not deal with black violence. We're not saying that at all. We stand at what point will this country become as upset with white crime and white violence as she is with black crime and black violence? That's what we're saying. The president. When will we ever have a president that will not only talk about crime in the street, but will say, if you will elect me president, I will wipe out the crime syndicate, or do the crime syndicate count? Oh, we know if you want the crime syndicate wiped out in this country in a week, let black folks take it over today. And there would be no crime syndicate next week this time. Crime in the street. LBJ, of all people, to talk about crime. Can you believe that? LBJ went to the Senate, to the Congress, when he was 26 years old. A poor, humble Baptist school teacher he was. Today he a multimillionaire. And don't none of you want to know where that money came from? I bet if he was black, you'd want to know. This is what we're saying. This is what we're tired of. You young white kids sitting in the house, especially you black kids, don't think this system's just after black folks. Used to be that way. The system's after young folks now. And that was very evident with your draft law you got handed to you 2 weeks ago. When they wiped out graduate school, baby, that was not us. They just decided to give you young white boys to the Viet Cong. So you youngsters have problems. You're going to have to deal with these problems. All these problems are going to deal with you. So this is what we say when we talk about the attitudes 3 weeks ago, 3 black college kids got gunned down on a black college campus. We know damn good and well that could never happen here. We know that. And we aren't telling white folks don't kill niggas. They've been killing us for 100 years. We saying you better understand our attitude from here on in after it happens. That's all we saying. In a country where white kids for the last 10 years been going to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, every spring, tearing up the whole town, and ain't none of you ever been shot. You're not sick enough to say to justify killing black folks, you should start shooting white folks. No, I hope none of you white kids never get shot. All we saying is you better understand our attitude after you start gunning black folks down. This is all, no more, no less. Now everybody's talking about the summer. Well, the police got tanks. We don't care about no damn tanks. George Washington didn't care about the British when he was trying to get that oppressor off his back. What make you think we that much different? We sure you can't bring everything into the black ghettos this summer that you got in Vietnam and you hung up over there. And all we saying to this system is when you roll them tanks into that black community, you better count them before you send them. Because you ain't going to get them all back. Believe that, yeah? Now, the day is over when black folks are scared of a system that's been strangling them. We're not scared of it no more. And we're not going to be afraid of it anymore. And all these old threats and all that old kind of stuff, we don't care. In a country where black folks die 6 years younger than white folks, what difference do it make if I get gunned down in the street this summer or next summer or live to get 36 years old and know I should have been 42? It makes no difference. And this is what we're trying to say. A country where these black kids can be killed on a college campus. But you never read where the police in this country's ever shot into a whorehouse. When them syndicate trampy hoodlums was meeting in Appalachia, New York, none of them never got shot at. And we also saying that while you are concerned about black violence, and we expect you, if you know a nigga got some dynamite, go take it from him. But we saying, when you going to get upset about your Minutemen, or do they count? This is all we saying, no more, no less. Damn, Minutemen got all these guns and hand grenades and dynamite. One day when white folks find out Minutemen gonna kill white folks and not black folks, I bet you take it from them then, won't you? Have you ever read in the paper where Minutemen shot a colored cat? And we done burned town after town down for the last 3 years. If that ain't made them mad, what will? And Minutemen's after white folks, not black folks. You couldn't give a Minuteman $1 million in a tank and pay him to go to Harlem tonight. So who they getting ready for? And all that dynamite the Minutemen got buried out in your little lily white suburbs, if it ever blew up one day accidentally, it ain't gonna do nothing but wipe out blocks of white folks. Then maybe you take that ammunition away from them. So this is what you youngsters are confronted with today. A morally polluted nation. I don't know when the last time this country has told the truth about anything. She finally decided to get honest about the riots. And then she didn't put the blame where it belongs. She wants to blame dumb, white, ignorant, racist crackers instead of blaming the politicians. That's where the blame should have gone. Hell, white folks don't raise their hand at birth and swear to uphold the United States Constitution. Politicians do. Senator Dirksen 2 years ago voted against the fair housing bill. Now he's up for re-election, so he's gonna vote for it. And white folks is dumb enough to let them crackers play with your emotions. Keep on, here. We gonna play with them too, here. You youngsters got a lot of problems you're gonna have to solve. We're gonna have to become totally honest with these problems. Somewhere we're gonna have to admit one day that America, it's probably the number one most racist country on the face of this earth, barring none, and including South Africa, because South Africa don't have no constitution pretending equal justice. And usually when black folks stand up and tell white folks that America is the number one most racist country, a lot of white folks get uptight, assuming they're being accused. If any of you got uptight just now, it's your own hang-ups in your own head. I did not say American white folks was the world's number one racist. I said America, and there is a difference. And one day when we drop our hang-ups long enough to realize that black folks and white folks that's born in this country are Americans, then one day when you hear that statement, America is the number one most racist country, that means black folks and white folks too. For some reason, America don't like to admit that she is a racist. And really, she don't like to admit that black folks is racist. And I say, why not? We've watched you for 400 years. Now, we've learned our racism from the boss of the races. But for some reason, nobody wants to admit that black folks is racist. Stokely Carmichael said, we don't want no more white folks in the movement. And those newspapers come out, I'm sure you read them where they said, that's reverse racism. Now, just what is that? Reverse what? No, man, we got a right to hate you the same forward way you hate us. Ain't nobody going through no back door to throw no brick at you. Reverse racism, is that a trick? And the statement that Stokely Carmichael made didn't have nothing to do with racism. It was pertaining to a local situation. Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, and it was one of the most honest, thorough, ethical statements ever been made in the history of the civil rights movement. But everybody started getting out the movement. White folks and colored folks, well, Stokely, they don't want no more white folks in the movement. No. But, you know, I guess I'm glad people misinterpreted that statement so we can get rid of you. Because since when did white folks start listening to Stokely Carmichael? Stokely said something and white folks and silly niggas took that as a reason to get out the movement and say, beautiful, because we didn't need you. You hear people say, well, you know, with this attitude, y'all gonna lose a lot of your friends. You haven't heard us complaining, have you? Because for every one white cat and black cat we've lost, baby, we've gained 30 others. We got some white folks that's in the movement now that's just not in it because it's the social thing to do. We got some white folks in it now that just won't march on Mississippi. They'll march on New York City, baby. And people say, well, what's wrong with you Negroes? How come you ridiculing Northern white liberals? We're not ridiculing Northern white liberals. We're just saying that as far as the black movement's concerned, white liberals have become obsolete. That's all. We do not need white liberals no more. We need white radicals. And we say to you liberals, if you want to stay liberals, groovy, get up on the Indian reservation. He needs liberals. Go out into the fields and help that Mexican American. He needs liberals. And I guarantee you one thing, if you do as good a job with that Indian and that Mexican as you did with us black folks, you'll become obsolete with him too. So we saying we're through playing games now. That's it all. Even when white folks decide they want to help us, they got to insult us and be playing games with us. And we saying that day is over. I remember when I was in college, they decided they gonna integrate the school I went to, and white boys fill out their application, and they asked, do you mind living with a Negro? And they thought they was doing me a favor. And the first white boy they sent to my dormitory room, I put him out. And the dean of men come by, very upset, what's wrong? We trying to get racial harmony. I said, you will never get racial harmony in my room as long as you asking white boys, do they want to live with black boys? And don't ask black boys, do they want to live with white boys? I'm going to put every one of them out, you send me. Even when the country get ready to solve her problem, we got to be her animal. He said, no, baby, it ain't gonna work like that no more. Oh, I had some white kids came to me, and this was way back in 54. And white folks came to me when I was at Southern Illinois University talking about joining the white fraternity. And I was a good smeller thing, good grades, third fastest half mile in the nation. So I was a groovy thing for them to get. And I said, well, dig, white brothers, I dig all that and I love it, but wait a minute. Wait just one minute. Now, you cats have the biggest hayride in the history of hayrides, once a year, that fraternity that wanted me, they had a hayride, baby, that was, and I said, just as sure enough, if I join this white fraternity that you want me to join, when next September rolls around and you have that hayride and invite that white sorority over and forget to get a black broad for me and find out the moon and the autumn affect colored folks just like it affect white folks, and I reach for that white broad, you gonna get uptight. And so if you think, cause you forgot, I'm gonna go and start talking to the horse. And this is all we're trying to say. We're tired of this game everybody wants to play. You know what I said when Stokely said we don't want no more white folks in the movement? That was an honest, ethical, moral statement. And it was pertaining to a local situation. But all at once, everybody want us to believe they listen to what colored folks tell them. And white folks just ran, got out the movement. I wonder if Stokely would have said, I want all white folks to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning for the next 5 years and don't go out the house on Tuesday and Wednesday. Would you listen to him? No, you listen to what you want to hear. Well, that was a moral, ethical statement. And what was meant by that statement, we don't want no more white folks in the movement, was pertaining to a local situation, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. What was meant by that is, we were just tired of you young white kids coming down south with your hang-ups and your guilt bugging our redneck Mississippi cracker when you couldn't take a nigger home with you in the suburbs of Detroit, Chicago, New York City, or Cleveland. And we were not telling you that you could not get in the movement. We were saying before you come back down south again to bug your redneck Mississippi cousin, take a nigger home with you and bug your mammy. Then after you come back down south to deal with your racist redneck cracker cousin, when you see him react, you will realize that just a few days ago, my mama and daddy was reacting the same way, and you'll have a little bit more compassion for him. That's all. And we didn't care what you thought about it, one way or the other. And so these are the problems that you youngsters are going to have to deal with. You're going to have to give sanity back to a totally insane nation. And you see the little marks of insanity. For 4 months last summer, every time I picked up the paper, I was reading on the front page, the senators and the congressmen were debating on whether you should have a clean meat bill. Remember that? Now, I mean, is clean meat debatable? Now, I'm a vegetarian, and it really tickled the hell out of me. When I picked up that final paper after 4 months of debate, and it says, Senate and Congress reach a compromise on a clean meat bill. And I ask you, what is that? I mean, what do a compromise on a clean meat bill mean? You can't have clean meat, and you can't have dirty meat, right? And so as one vegetarian to a group of meat eaters, have your meat tasted different lately? Look at Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown. They proved how insane this country is. Stokely Carmichael is 25 years old. Rap Brown is 23. Two young men have just scared the number one most mighty nation on the face of this earth to death. Is that insanity? Khrushchev, when he was premier of Russia, said he's gonna bury us. And we said, come on, baby, come on. And Khrushchev had the hardware to do it with. Stokely Carmichael don't own one missile. Rap Brown don't even have a canoe, let alone a fleet of ships. Now I ask you, is this insanity? And everybody asked me, well, what's wrong with Stokely and Rap? I tell you what's wrong with them, whether you like it or not. The only thing wrong with them is they have dared to become as bitter as Patrick Henry. And if you don't like it, then damn it, get all that filth out that American history book. Don't tell me about some white man running around. Yeah, I'm supposed to be so proud to read about some white man talking about, give me liberty or give me death. He made me take a test on him. Well, do you think Patrick Henry was talking about singing freedom songs to the British? You think Patrick Henry was talking about getting them a bunch of cats going to Boston, helping the British unload the tea? He was talking about doing that thing. I'm not saying you're supposed to agree with Stokely and Rapp, but at least you ought to get hip enough to this old file history book to get hip to what's in there. And don't have no doubt in your mind that this history book is a very trampy, dirty book. The first page is brilliant. You read the American history, the first page, it just makes you want to cry. Here's a white cat over there in Europe that wanted to get out from underneath the yoke of oppression of the king and the queen. He wanted to find him a land where he could seek out freedom of expression and worship his own God. My God, that's beautiful, ain't it? But don't turn the page. Woo! This book gets so dirty when you read it. So on his way over here to find that freedom and get out from underneath that yoke of oppression, he stole us. That's a hell of a prayer meeting to be going to with some slaves, ain't it? Imagine a cat wanting to liberate himself and do it with some slaves. Boy, they don't make heathens like that no more. And then not only that, it gets worse as you keep reading this old history book. Just read it on through. Not only did he steal us, he came over here and discovered a country that was already occupied. Now, how do you do that? And then talk about crime in the streets. How do you discover a country that's already... That's like me and my old lady walking out of here tonight, and your old lady sitting in your brand new car, and my old lady say, I sure would like that car to pray in, and I say, let's discover it. And so I walk over to you, and I say, all right, come on, get out that car. We just discovered it. And I bet you and your lady would be as surprised as the Indians was. Rap Brown made a speech last summer in East St. Louis, Illinois. He said, get a gun, nigga, and watch the police. And the press got to calling me. They're so upset. I said, Mr. Gregory, we know you nonviolent. What do you think about Rap Brown's statement telling colored folks to get a gun and watch the police? I said, let me get this American history book, and I'll show you that that wasn't an original statement. Yes, Stokely and Rapp have never said nothing original. Oh, here it is right here. Paul Revere rode through the white community and said, get a gun, white folks, the British are coming. Well, whether you like it or not, at that point of history, the British was the police. Stokely and Rapp, everybody's upset. Is that an insane nation? Two cats and scared them to death? Stokely Carmichael went all the way around the world last summer, and you know the CIA followed him, and reported everything he said. And I don't know if you read it or not, but please don't take my word for it. They put in all the papers. Go back and read everything Stokely said while he was outside of this country last year. And regardless of how mad you get, you can never read one thing in there where he lied on this country. Go back and read everything Rap Brown said. Rap has never lied. Anytime a whole nation can hate two men for telling the truth, it ain't nothing wrong with those two men. It's something wrong with that nation. I wish you youngsters would do me a favor one day when you get some time. Check out a Declaration of Independence in the library and write it down and get your lady to type it up for you. You fellas carry that Declaration of Independence all the time in your pockets. And they'll never be caught without it. And you girls just carry it in your pocketbook. And this summer, when the ride season open up again, I'd like for you to do Brother Gregg a favor. Now, I would never be sick enough to stand here and tell you to justify violence in no form. But what I will do is when the riot season open up again, I want you to turn the television on and watch Huntley and Brinkley, because he be showing them niggas burning them towns. They be burning and talking about Whitey and burning. And get your mom and daddy and bring them in the room and put the television out in the center of the floor. And Lord, if your grandma and grandpa is anywhere close, please get them. Yeah, and just put them there and let them look at them niggas burning them towns and cut the sound down off the television so they can't see nothing but the pictures. And then reach in your pocket or your pocketbook and get out that Declaration of Independence and stand way back in the back of the room while your folks is looking at them niggas burn them towns. And read the Declaration of Independence as loud as you can so they can hear it real good. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that when these rights are destroyed over long periods of time, it is your duty to destroy or abolish that government. Malcolm X didn't write that. Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown didn't have nothing to do with that. That's your beloved Declaration of Independence. And I say maybe before the summer season open up, we should all march on Washington, burn the Declaration of Independence up. Or maybe we should change it and make it read white only. But somewhere this country got to stop putting that Declaration of Independence in black neighborhoods so black kids can read it. Because a lot of folks read that and think that meant anybody. Like the interesting thing about this history book, when I read this American history book, I can't believe that America's so dumb she really think it's that much difference between black folks and white folks that they can give me a history book telling me. It is right there. George Washington and that band of farmers he had tore up the colonies, beat the hell out the British, called it Revolutionary War. Said, what was it over? So here it is right here. It says, over tea tax. Nah, ain't nobody going to war over tea. So it must have been jobs or education or housing. So, and you look all the way through this book, and we fought a Revolutionary War over a tax on tea. 1968, 85% of Americans don't even drink tea today. I mean, can we really be this insane to believe that it is that much difference between black folks and white folks that white folks can go to war over a tea bag and not see what my brother's gonna do? Well, it's not that much difference, baby. Well, you youngsters have a lot of problems. Problem not that you created, that us older folks created. I was surprised when I found out I was a racist, but I knew one day if I was American, I had to be a racist, because America's a racist country, and this is all I know. I found my racism, though. I asked myself one day, if I had to lose my black wife to another man, and I had a choice of losing that black wife of mine to a white boy or a black boy, which one would I take? And you think I didn't find my racism? Yeah, I picked losing my wife to a black cat under the false pretenses that I didn't want my black friends laughing at me about losing my wife to a white boy. I don't care what you hide it under, that's racism. Well, I found mine. And America better find hers before it's too late. A lot of people talk about Stokely and Rapp. Sometimes I wonder how a country with 200 million people haven't stopped long enough to say, where'd they come from? Why are they acting so bitter? If you did a little research, you might not be able to justify what Stokely and Rapp's doing, but you sure would understand it. Yeah, they was pinned down in that stinking South for 6 years. I met Rapp 6 years ago in Greenwood, Mississippi. Rapp was 17 years old. Matter of fact, that's the same day Stokely Carmichael insulted me. Stokely said, if you can't be a nonviolent nigga, get the hell on back up north. You see, what you don't know is the Stokelys and the Rapps and the SNCC kids taught us nonviolence while Dr. King had to fly all over the country explaining to white folks what nonviolence was. I had to sit and watch Stokely and Rapp and them SNCC kids when it came, they turned to get on top the Freedom House when it was their time to guard it. You know what it feels like sitting on top of your Freedom House at night waiting on some redneck cracker with some dynamite to come by and blow it up, and all you guarding your Freedom House with is a nonviolent attitude? You try it. Waiting on somebody to blow up the house you live in with a nonviolent attitude in a country where grown men go out hunting little bitty rabbits with a shotgun. You know what it feels like coming home night after night and another one of your freedom workers is gone, dead? We lost as many as 20 freedom workers a week sometime. The FBI knew about it, but they never saw fit to tell America. If you knew what they've been through, baby. You remember Birmingham, Alabama, don't you? Bull Connor. I was there that day when they arrested 2,400 of us. You read about all them little kids, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We're not saying don't arrest kids. When you go to jail, they separate the men from the women, the girls from the boys, and the adults from the juveniles. Right across from our cell block, we stayed in there 4 days. They had the little 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old girls that they had arrested. And you know what it felt like every night, man? We had to sit over there and look at them officials bring lesbians in and turn loose on them little kids. You know what it feels like looking at a lesbian tamper with a 4-year-old child, man? I say, if you had gone through what Stokely and Rapp went through for 6 years, you might understand what they're talking about. You might understand how they feel. Oh, you read some of the things in the paper, but you have to see it. You go to the library now and check out your papers and see where they did a very good story talking about them, that brick that hit that little black kid, 5-year-old kid in the mouth while we was trying to integrate a school. But baby, you have to stand there and watch a brick hit a 5-year-old kid in the mouth, baby. Then you might understand what Stokely and Rapp talking about, and it don't make no difference what color that kid is. Well, you kids got a job. Because after you deal with the social problem, you got to give sanity back to an insane nation. Mark my word, this nation is insane. Well, look at Vietnam. Can you believe out of all the countries on the face of this earth that sit at Geneva and signed the Vietnamese treaty, America was not one of those countries? America's one of the few countries that did not sign the Vietnam treaty. Now one day, if we can work as hard to live up to the treaties we have signed with the American Indian as we are trying to uphold a treaty we didn't have nothing to do with, this might be a groovy country one day. But that don't count, do it? We are that insane that we can go 10,000 miles away trying to give a foreigner a better way of life than your own red brother has, who we stole the country from. Are we really this sick and insane? 10,000 miles away? What about that reservation that's just a few hundred miles from you? That don't count, do it? And you wonder why people all over the world don't trust you? How could I trust you if you sit in your mama's house on fire every day and wants to come by and help put mine out? No. A nation so insane that you can keep that war going on as long as this government can make you believe we killing 12 Viet Cong to every one American. You believe that, eh? I sure would hate to be the insurance company that got to give American soldiers $10,000 for every one of them get wiped out. If you could ever get your hands on that insurance count, baby, it would scare you to death. Or if you just had enough sense to go to the library here and say, would you pull out newspapers for 3 years every day and just get an ad machine and look at every paper for the last 3 years and tabulate the Viet Cong kill rate. Tabulate how many Viet Cong we said was killed every day for 3 years. And then you got to find out the injured rate by multiplying by 30. After you add up your death rate, multiply by 30, and you get your injured rate. And if you can believe that, then what you believe in is the Viet Cong can produce more live, grown Viet Cong men than they can produce rice. An insane nation. Right there shows you how insane we are. We got a law to say you can't burn that flag. And you know the sick thing about it? If 2 years ago you picked up the paper in America and read where some Russians went to jail for burning the flag, everybody would have said, well, that's communism for you. You just can't express yourself. I got people tell me you shouldn't talk about the flag. I went to Korea and for the flag. Maybe that's what's wrong. Are you dying for the flag or are you dying for my rights underneath that flag? There is a difference. There is a difference. Because if you go somewhere and die for a flag, you ain't nothing but a chump. That's right. All the Americans that died for the flag during World War II died in vain because that flag just had 48 stars on it. That ain't legal. You can burn that one. Y'all got a lot of work to do. One day somewhere you youngsters gonna have to ask yourself one question. If democracy is as good as we say it is, and why in the world are we running all over the world trying to ram it down people's throat with a gun? One day when you youngsters make democracy work right for the first time, that's the day we can bring the guns home, but not until then. Anything good, you don't have to force down people's throat. You don't believe that, you get $10,000 and want to get rid of it and see if you're going to have to get a gun and talk about, stick me up. You just lay that bread outside on the ground, go on home, go to bed. You know, a lot of people have been talking about the riots that's been going on. A lot of people say riots hurt the cause. I wish I could stand here and tell you that was true, because it's a sad day when violence and riots can help, but violence and riots have helped. I was hoping after Detroit last summer, my government would prove to me how riots had hurt black folks' cause. I was just wishing the country would say, okay, colored folks, we're going to show you how we treat people that know how to behave. And I was hoping America would have gone up on the Indian reservation and cut my red brother loose. He ain't burnt no towns down lately. But he's still up on the reservation. Don't think for 1 minute we ain't hip enough to know what that Indian have to do to get off that reservation. We know what he have to do. You have to realize he's dealing with a sick, insane nation. And I bet if an Indian out in Arizona today got up on the viaduct right over the expressway and caught Whitey coming home from work this evening in Arizona and got to popping that pistol at him, bow, and yelling, red power, bow, oh, the whole country would be upset in the morning. And tomorrow this time, LBJ be on television. I can just see LBJ now. Those Indian boys is at it again. I want you Indians to know that I'm not just president of the black folks and the white folks, but I'm president of the red folks too. And I want you to know we've just sent our number one specialist in Indian affairs up to the reservation. And that number one specialist in Indian affairs is probably some nigger from Chicago. Now, why don't y'all quit playing games with yourself? Let me ask you something. How many of you remember reading about 14 weeks ago? And I'd like for you to raise your hand if you read it. Remember reading about 14 weeks ago where Henry Ford in Detroit City hired 6,000 colored folks in 2 days? Raise your hand. You see that? 6,000 colored folks he hired too. They tell me they was hiring black folks so fast you thought slavery was in style again. Now I think you know why Henry Ford hired 6,000 black folks, don't you? You know why. Last summer the fire got too close to the Ford plant. Don't scorch the Mustangs, baby. And I'm sure if the Indians come to Detroit this summer and get a little light flame going, you'll read where Ford went up on the reservation and hired some Indians. Henry Ford's going to see the headline. Henry Ford's going to Arizona to see about opening up an assembly plant on the reservation.
Yeah.
You youngsters got a big job. You don't only have the job of dealing with crime in the street, you have the job of dealing with the policeman. You have the job of apologizing to the cop and the fireman, because us older folks before you have made the cop and the fireman the scum of society. You got to sit one day and realize that the police and the fireman is the number one and number two most important man to our society. And in many areas of this country, we've treated the police like dogs. That's why they act like dogs. That's not their fault, it's our fault. The richest nation in the world. The garbage collectors can go on strike in New York City and get a better paycheck for their kids. What's the cop supposed to do about his kids? He can't go on strike. And this country's so morally corrupt that until every cop walks off his beat, we ain't gonna see fit to give him a decent salary. You young kids got to take the cop and the fireman, and you got to apologize for us. You got to say, we from this day on will overpay the policeman and the fireman just to make sure that they'll never be underpaid. Hell, I was hoping when LBJ was talking about crime in the street. And you got to be just like you was with our movement. You white folks had to come in and help black folks because we didn't have enough sense at the beginning. You got to help this cop because he ain't got enough sense to get this damn system off his back. He running around shooting at people and he can't even get a decent salary. You got to take care of that. Hell, the soldiers don't have as hard a job as the cop. Soldiers don't fight every day in the week. Soldier know who the enemy is. Cop don't know when he gonna die. Every time he walk out of his house for 8 hours, he never know if he coming back in again. I was hoping LBJ would have said in his State of the Union message that he was gonna ask the senators and the congressmen that while they were so interested in crime in the street, to get a little bit interested in the cop. Not just to give him a tank and some more hand grenades and some tear gas, give him something that can send his kids to school. I was hoping that LBJ would push a law through that saying any cop or fireman in this country that gets killed in the line of duty, the government would give his family $10,000. That's too morally right for LBJ, so you youngsters are gonna have to take care of that. You youngsters got to realize we living in a country, the richest country on the face of this earth, and baby, there's not another country on the face of this earth that has as many volunteer firemen and police as America has. That got to stop, man. How this country so rich? Say, well, the town's so small, we can't pay the fireman or the cop. Can you believe I've been all through America, I ain't never been in a town so small they had a volunteer barbershop. I've never been in a town so small they had a volunteer restaurant or a volunteer doctor. How come we got to have volunteer firemen and police? That's your job. Let me say to you now probably the most important thing I'll say to you youngsters today. 20 and 30 years ago, black folks and white folks talked to one another. They wasn't talking about nothing, man. But it sound good to us, and we listen. If you say the same thing white folks said to black folks 20, 30 years ago, you might get hurt today. And I tell you why. 20, 30 years ago, black folks in this country had an empty stomach. Today, black folks in this country have a full stomach but a hungry mind, and a hungry mind will not tolerate the same thing an empty stomach did. Empty stomachs deal on smell, and hungry minds deal on sound, and all at once, this country don't sound right to us anymore. Three years ago, five white kids burned up their draft card, and in 2 weeks' time, the Senate and Congress had pushed through an anti-draft card burning bill. We haven't been able to get an anti-lynching bill pushed through in 100 years. My country just told me she thinks more of a piece of cardboard than she thinks of my black mammy. I will bring her to her knees for that. Twenty and 30 years ago, white folks told black folks, education's your problem, boy. And 30 years ago, black folks was hungry enough to believe that. Don't tell us education is our problem, never again. Because we realize now that that ain't nothing but a cheap whitey cop-out. We look at Vietnam and know better. You got 688,000 men in Vietnam today, ready to free that Vietnamese instantly, and not one white or black American ever questioned that Vietnamese educational standard. And what we're saying, if you don't question that foreigner's educational standard and you're going to free him with your Air Force and your Navy, you better not question mine. Education is our problem. Well, you ever stop to realize how many millions of people would be dead today on the face of this earth if it were not for blood plasma? Are you aware of the fact that an American Negro by the name of Charlie Drew invented blood plasma? And don't take my word for it. Check it out in your library. An American Negro by the name of Charlie Drew invented blood plasma. Charlie Drew bled to death in an Atlanta, Georgia hospital waiting room after an automobile accident because they didn't accept niggers. Don't never tell us about education. Never again. Yeah? The man that had the wisdom, the knowledge, and the educational background to give blood plasma to the world died from the lack of his own invention because his face was black. Don't tell us about education, man. We don't want to hear it. It's not our problem. All these people that run around talking about Negroes ought to quit demonstrating and we ought to go down in the ghetto and pull our brother up by his bootstrap. We say you ought to give him some boots. All these people run around talking about, y'all ought to stop all this nonsense and leave people alone and go down to the ghetto and do something about black folks' morals, the morality rate, the morals of black. And let me say something to my black sister in the house. Anytime these white folks tell you that black women in America has 20% illegitimate babies, I hope you black women quit getting mad, because he ain't lying on us, sis. We've had a ball in the ghetto, baby. 20% of the black women in America has illegitimate babies. 2% of the white women in America has illegitimate babies. But one day we're going to sit the record straight and let America know that if we ever get our hands on you white folks' abortion credit card, we show you how to knock a rate down, too. Yeah, we in a country that people go around whispering, why do all them colored folks have all them babies in the ghetto? They can't take care of them. Well, we make a deal with you. The day this dirty, trampy system will learn how to hire black boys and give us good jobs like you give to white boys, so we can afford all them whores and prostitutes you can afford, we'll quit having all them babies at home, too. You see, people want to run around and talk about niggas as lazy and shiftless and we don't want to live up to our responsibility. We ain't trying to duck no responsibility, baby, but we're not going to let you duck none neither. We're going to call this thing like it is from here on in. This is what we're talking about. No more, no less. In a country where people run around getting upset over black women on relief and poor white women on relief. And we say to a system that if relief and welfare upsets you, then why don't you quit calling it relief and welfare and call it foreign aid? That term ain't never bothered you. a nation where 22 of the top most rich people in this country have never paid income tax because of the tax loopholes. That don't upset you, though. I know about that tax loophole because I'm in that income bracket. I could take every one of you sitting in this room right now out to dinner and wouldn't cost me a quarter, because at the end of the year, I can write off on my income tax as a publicity expense. That don't bother you, but some poor white or black woman that needs to write their baby's milk off, that upsets you, don't it? Yeah. And if you white folks would excuse me, just let me say something to my brothers and sisters. I wish y'all would quit getting upset and quit lying when these white folks get to telling y'all about them dirty, greasy, stinking property depreciating niggas they don't want to live next door to. Y'all act like colored folks ain't dirty. Y'all always wonder, well, you mean Ralph Bunch? No, he ain't talking about Ralph Bunch. You know what he's talking about. And why don't you get honest with this white boy and just tell him that most niggas you know is dirty and ignorant and stink, but let him also know that America dirtied us up. The one interesting thing about Hitler, with all of Hitler's insanity, when old Hitler went out with his mad, insane self to inspect his Nazi concentration camps, and as he walked past them dirty, stinking, property-depreciating Jews with all of his madness, he knew that wasn't Judaism he was smelling. He knew that when you put 15,000 Jews in an area built for 1,000, that was pure Nazism he was smelling. And one day this country got to realize, when she looks at these dirty, ignorant niggas, that's America you seeing, baby. And when you smell us, that's democracy that you smell. And what we saying is just simple. If you want black folks to smell a little bit better to you, then we say, sweeten up democracy, baby. Yeah, because we ain't going to give you one till you give us the other. In closing, let me say this. First, if any of you youngsters have to leave here to get to a class, I hope we can be honest enough with ourselves that you can get up and leave without assuming somebody going to assume you're a racist. Everybody's running around talking about civil rights legislation. Let's be honest, can we? We don't want no civil rights legislation, baby. We want that United States Constitution. And we ain't going to be happy till we get it. And the civil rights legislation is so good, then we say you white folks should take it and live under it. But give us the United States Constitution. Because civil rights legislation, all that means to us is, for 100 years, a man's changed my dollar for 32 cents, and now today he's giving me 64 cents, and he's saying that's progress. And we saying 64 cents changed for a dollar is not progress. I tell you what progress is. We're going to get a full dollar's change for a dollar on this cash register, never ring again. Now that's progress. You see, people's telling us, y'all behave yourself and be nice, we give you a fair housing bill. And we say, we don't need no fair housing bill. You take that fair housing bill and tie it up and stick it someplace. When that old redneck white Russian cracker broad, Stalin's daughter, when she came over here to live in my country, a known Russian and a known communist, you didn't make that broad get no fair housing bill to live next door to you. How come I got to get one? Well, I need a civil rights bill. You tell me I go to Vietnam tonight to guarantee some foreigner instant freedom with my life, and my six black kids is told to get theirs on the installment plan? I know y'all don't think like that, and if you do, you better quit, because it's going to get you in a whole lot of trouble. You bring all these Russian exchange students over here to my country, they don't want to be citizens. No, they're just going to come in, go to school 4 years, go right back to Moscow. 10 years from now, they might drop a bomb on your mama's house. You don't make that Russian get no fair housing bill in these old racist college towns that live next door to you. How come I got to get one? Hell, if I'm in Vietnam tonight and got killed, this country would give my wife $10,000 as a token of appreciation because her man died for the beliefs and ideals of his country. And my black wife would not be able to take her $10,000 and buy her a house anywhere she wanted to buy one in. What kind of animal are you? This is what we're saying. And this is what's going to get this country in trouble. We're tired of these insults, baby, and we ain't going to take no more of them. You know, every night when I lay down and go to bed, and I got to realize that had my daddy been killed during World War II by a German, I got to realize that had in 1942 a German killed my daddy, in 42 I was 10 years old, I'll be 36 years old this year. You know, when I stop and think that had a German killed my daddy in 42, not only would it meant that I would have gone half my childhood without a daddy, but I would have gone up to the day 26 years without a daddy. You know how insulting it is when you got to lay down in bed and go to sleep at night and realize that right tonight, 1968, the same German that could have killed my daddy and made me go 26 years without a daddy can come to my country tonight and live somewhere my daddy's boy can't live. Baby, we will burn your neighborhood down house by house and brick by brick if you don't stop insulting us like this. This is what we're talking about, man. And maybe the problem is black folks is thinking too white. Because we know one thing, we know if we took over this country tonight and put white folks in the same trick for 10 hours this country's had us in for the last 100 years, you would burn this country down to the ground, baby. We know that. We don't have to ask you. We can tell you because we look at what you do in the Vietnam. You burning Vietnam down to the ground to free a foreigner, we know what you do to free your mama. And so you youngsters have a lot of work to do. We living in time of revolution. Please understand me when I tell you revolution is controlled by nature and not by man. Revolution is nothing more but an extension of evolution. Evolution is nothing more but a gradual naturistic change that after long periods of time leads into quick change, which is revolution. When a woman gets pregnant, the first 9 months of the gestation period is evolution. When the water bag breaks, that's revolution. If you think National Guardsmen and tanks can stop revolution, then you find you a pregnant woman that's 9 months pregnant, and when her water bag breaks, you get all the National Guardsmen to cross her legs and aim them tanks at her and see if you can keep that baby up in her, yeah? You know the theory of spontaneous combustion? You take some oily greasy rags and put into your closet and close the door so can't no air circulate. And talk to them rags like white folks talk to niggas. Say, you old dumb, ignorant, coon rags, why don't you come out there and clean yourself up? You better come on out, because I got a big tank out here, and them little bitty rags in there ain't enough for y'all to burn the whole house down. You just keep believing that here, and you keep that door closed, and one day you're going to lay down and go to sleep, and you and your tank going to wake up on fire. They call that spontaneous combustion. Man ain't got nothing to do with it after he mixed that first mistake. The black ghettos from one end of this country to the other is America's all the dirty, greasy rags. Jones, you better open up that door. That's gonna pop. You know how they make a hydroelectric dam, don't you? They take nature's free-running water, go out there and bottle it up. And they create enough friction and energy from bottling up that water to light up a whole town. We call that hydroelectric power. You bottle up 22 million niggas, they'll light up a town for you one day, too. Call it anything you want to call it. See, the beautiful thing about nature, she don't care about what you call her reaction. Once you make that action, she will have a reaction. And so somewhere down the line, I hope you youngsters can solve these problems. Black folks don't hate white folks. You got some niggas hate turnips. But we don't hate white folks. When man hate man, that's war. You could win a war with us because you outnumber us and got more firepower. We don't hate white folks. We hate this stinking, trampy white system. And when man hate a system, that's revolt. And there's a difference. And America's making the same mistake with us the British made with George Washington. Making the same mistake with us Batista made with Castro. You just keep calling this rioting and looting and hoodlumism. Let me say to you that I hope you youngsters will take the challenge. Don't go through this pit us old folks went through. I look back at the 1964 election. I could not vote in that election because I would never stoop low enough to voting for the lesser of the two evils. But had I stooped to the lowness of voting for the lesser of the two evils in 64, you can damn sure bet you it would have been for Brother Barry Goldwater. Because the only thing wrong with Goldwater in 1964, he dared be the most honest of the two candidates. In a country so sick and insane that we made that man pay the price for being honest. That's why I'm a candidate for the presidency this year, because I know it's a lot of people that would never stoop to the lowness of voting for the lesser of the two evils, and I'm going to give them something to vote for they don't have to be ashamed of. And I tell you something. And in closing, let me explain this to you. I'm dressed the way I'm dressed because I refuse to get a haircut or shave or wear anything but work clothes or smoke another cigarette till the war is over in Vietnam. This is my second 40-day fast. This is one that I might not never come off. I haven't decided yet. I'm so upset over my generation that didn't solve the problems. I'm on college campuses today because you young folks is the most morally committed group of youngsters that's ever lived in the history of this country. And if you don't believe that, you just go home and be honest and talk to your old corrupt thinking parents and see how morally correct you are. Why are you so morally beautiful? I tell you why. You see, it is possible for Dick Gregory to go tonight and check into my hotel, get in bed, go to sleep, the hotel catch on fire, and I could burn to death. That is possible. But it is not possible for Dick Gregory to check into a hotel that is on fire with intentions of going to sleep. That's what makes you youngsters so beautiful today. The hotel's on fire, baby, and you know it. And it's going to be a whole lot of changes. You're going to have to make the country so sick and insane that any time a nation tells her young folks that at 18 years old, you're too old to vote, you're too young to vote, but you're old enough to go to war and die, there's something wrong with that nation. And somewhere down the line, you youngsters got to work. Even if you dig wars, you got to be able to say, if a cat is old enough to die at 18, he's got to be old enough to vote at 18. It's just that simple. And so my fast, my first 40-day fast, where I denied myself of everything but the steel water, and let me tell you, baby, I went through some changes, baby. Not for me. I'm 36 years old. I'm too old to get drafted. And with my political beliefs, if I tried to volunteer for the Army, the government would burn my draft card. But let me say to you that I went on that fast for you youngsters. It was just my little way of saying thank you for being so beautiful, baby. And my little way of punishing myself for having my eyes closed when I was your age. And I say to you that I'm on another fast now simply because 90% of you young folks that demonstrate against the war are too young to vote. And so this fast I'm dramatizing all across the country for young folks not to get their hair cut, not to shave, not to wear nothing but work clothes, and to quit smoking till the war is over. And you know what happens if you stop getting haircuts? Enough of you youngsters quit getting haircuts because of the war, the barbers will come out here in the street and demonstrate. They vote. And baby, it's a lot of barbers in this country. Enough of you young folks decide you're not going to shave till the war is over. Some old woman, 75 years old, that owned 15,000 shares of Gillette Blue Blade, got to come out in the street. You youngsters get concerned enough to decide you're not wearing nothing but work clothes. Till that war's over, the garment industry got to get up tight. That's a big industry, baby. I've been smoking since I was 13 years old, up until 3 months ago. And then it dawned on me that 8 cents on every pack of cigarettes you pay federal tax. This country takes in not only just 8 cents on a pack of cigarettes, plus the 8 cents, it takes in $2 billion tax from the company. I decided I wasn't going to buy no more napalm. So I decided I was going to quit smoking. You want that war to end in Vietnam, you get enough of you youngsters to smoke that last cigarette out your pack and mail that empty pack into the cigarette company and tell them you're not going to smoke again till the war is over in Vietnam. And when this cigarette industry realizes freedom for the Vietnamese means them going bankrupt, they will kick LBJ's door open, smack that barbecue sauce off his mouth, and say, "Boy, so in closing, let me say to you youngsters, this country can be saved nonviolently if you use the economic stick you got in your hand. If you do not put the economic pressure down, if it's too hard for you to smoke, you better start saving your plane fares. Because this country won't exist in the next 3 years unless you youngsters change it. I hope you don't make the mistake we made when we sit in these universities. We were so busy going to school, learning how to make a living, we forgot to learn how to live. I hope you don't waste your 4 years at this school learning how to make a living, because if you do, you haven't got a guarantee that you can keep a job after you get one. But if you spend your time at this institution or any other institution learning how to live, I guarantee you that making a living will be the easiest thing for you to do on the face of this earth, barring none. Two things I'd like to say to you. My new book that just come out called The Shadow That Scares Me, it's a very important book. I'm not telling you to buy it because I got my money before I even wrote it. So if they never sell a book, I couldn't care less. Go to the library and read it. It's very important. As for The Shadow That Scares Me, after you read it, if you dig it, steal it. Now, Dick, in closing, let me say to you white kids in the house, this summer, when you go back to your various areas, please get into the white ghettos and do something with this poor hillbilly who is worse off than black folks could ever be, who the only reason he haven't been heard from is because this system gave him a nigga to play with, and he can't play with us no more. And I dare say to you young white kids that if you all don't get into that ghetto and help this poor white hillbilly, and don't lead yourself to believe, as America wants you to believe, that poor white folks just live in Appalachia. They live in every major city in America. And if you don't help him now, 18 months from now, you'll be running around calling him a rioter and a looter and a hoodlum. And I hope that we have quit taking turns in this country. It was the Italians' turn and the Irish turn and the Jewish turn, and now it looks like it's the black folks' turn. I hope you don't let this happen. I hope you let this be the turn for people. And if you're not gonna help that Indian, stop helping us. If you're not gonna help that poor white cat, stop helping us, because we got to stop this fraud. And if we gonna pull out and leave them cats like so many other people did us, then I hope black folks be caught up in this web of injustices till my Indian brother and till this poor white cracker get out. Black folks can't go into that white ghetto because he got such a passionate hate for us, not through his fault, because the system taught him that we're doing more harm than good. But you young white kids, you got to forget. You use the excuse that he hates colored folks. And it's very interesting how it shifted. When young white kids was helping us, they was called nigger lovers. And now young white kids don't want to go down and help that poor redneck cracker because he's called nigger hater. Go down there and help him and straighten him up and give him something on his table other than just a turnip, and show him that his kids are Americans too, and that they should know where to get medical facilities. And I hope that the white hillbilly don't have to go to Detroit and burn one summer so he can get him some jobs. I say to you youngsters, this day is beautiful. You are right.
and we are wrong, and don't never stop being right. Thank you. God bless you. May nature have fun with you.